Once again, Gordon Michael Scallion. Gordon, I've had a lot of theoretical physicists on the show, really wild, good guys right at the top of their game, you know, co-founder of the string theory, those kind of people. Mm-hmm. And they are speculating about many dimensions, that there are many dimensions, perhaps as many as 11 dimensions or more, dimensions that we cannot see or sense almost always, although there are those who say there's an exception to that. The theoretical, the scientists, they're saying they're there. They can't prove it yet, but they definitely believe they're there. People like yourself perhaps can see occasionally across and or into these dimensions, and it may well be that in one of these dimensions, these entities we're talking about reside. I don't know. Do you?
The answer is yes, but more than likely there are, the way it breaks down is that there's basically, at least on the Earth, there's 7 levels of consciousness. Within each of those levels, there are 7 sub-levels. So we could say on Earth there are 49. When we leave the Earth, we enter Mars or Venus or whatever, there's a different level of consciousness, different levels of, different layers, if you will. Mm-hmm. Now, in the lower layers, they're more dense, closer to the physical matter. So if you can imagine the Earth having 7 Earths, and where the second Earth, you can barely see it, you know, just barely, and then the third on, you can't see it. And each of these Earths, if you will, are kingdoms. They're places where souls can dwell. The lower levels of these, ones that are closer to Earth, is where we find most of the demonic forces. These are populated by those souls who have fallen during incarnations on Earth, and they find themselves in this kind of borderland of negativity.
These dimensions would be immediately below the physical?
Below or above, I guess you need a relative point, but let's just say
immediately adjacent to.
Yeah, it's like a layer. If we could see the Earth as a bottom layer, and then the next layer moving up an ascension level, if you would, you have the second borderland and the third. They're also known as astral realms, is another term used in occultism.
Right.
These realms become packed. Now, as you have more and more people in the world, and obviously more deaths, many of these people between lives find themselves in this kind of an environment. And some of these never take on physical form, ever, never have. They just, from the beginning, they've fallen on that negative reality, a Luciferian force, if you will. And they're sitting there. Now, the reason that they're at that lower level, or the second level, is because it's closer to Earth in vibration. It's like a harmonic up from the Earth.
Gotcha.
And they're easy for them to prey, if you will, on those people who are unbalanced or negative in any way. So it's like a feeding ground. In my book, I wrote about how at schools, I would see these red streams of energy around certain schools, especially in cities. And then I realized that it was a combination of things, not only the society, but the way we build schools, the pollution of the cities, the negativity. There was a whole bunch of things. A lot of that has improved, however, in the past 3 years. I've seen that portion lessening. As these events occur, we say, you know, why do we have these shootings? These are the senseless things. Well, lots of times we can take a negative action and turn it into a positive one by reevaluating how we do things in schools. And I think we did that. You know, we did the obvious things, like we put metal detectors in and security guards, something we should never have been part of our system or our society. It wasn't when I grew up.
As a talk show host that I used to know a long time ago would say, though, again and again, he would say, isn't that a Band-Aid on a bullet wound?
Yeah, it is. It is. It's trying to stop it now. And then, because the political system for change is a long one, But whenever we have a crisis that raises its head and consciousness then looks at it and says, okay, this is out of balance, what do we do? And so, you know, there's the period of debate, argument, funding, and the whole nine yards, just like since 9/11, you know, the whole preparation for war now, all this took time. And it's the same thing with schools and bringing change into schools. It takes time. So lots of times, like I said, a negative action can turn into positive for other people. But in these realms, these lower realms, this is the feeding ground, if you will, for these forces. But they can only feed on those who literally have no light in them.
When you're on the street, when you're in the cities, and I don't think you go very frequently, but when you do you see a lot of attachments? Do you see now a lot of possession underway? I mean, something obviously brought you to the program tonight to talk about this.
Yeah.
Something out of the ordinary.
I don't see possession in the sense that we've been talking about directly, where you have a single entity who is possessing an individual, you know, has taken over the individual.
Yes.
What I do see, however, is a different form of possession. It's kind of a group negative consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
So if you could imagine that, let's say there are thousands or tens of thousands of lost souls, and people are praying for these lost souls constantly, trying to move them up to higher levels of consciousness away from this. But they're still there. There's still this group. And this group moves towards wherever there is a negativity. So what I see is these collective thought forms, if you will, of negativity that are being fed by individuals who are, I'll just use the word lost. Let's just say that they're lost. They're open to influence from the outside.
A lot of them have gone off the edge because of the pressures we talked about earlier.
Yes. Yeah, and the pressures are at all levels. It's not just, you know, doing well in school. The pressure is the influence of the home and the split homes. You know, we have a 50% divorce rate. We have single moms working very hard to try to make it happen and to financially balance life. I mean, things have changed a lot, and it's very difficult for families now to, you know, they're in a basic survival mode. And in the process of that, if they give up their spiritual essence, if they don't acknowledge it, if they don't work with it, regardless of whether it's a religious system or not, it doesn't matter. What does matter is that there is a belief that there is a greater power that is good and benevolent, because then you draw from that source versus this negative source.
As somebody from Taft, California asks, does Gordon believe that people like Charles Manson, Jeffrey Dahmer, people like that are, in fact, possessed?
The Manson case I can talk about because I did research on that, and I've had a series of experiences on that. Yeah. That particular case was not a case of direct possession, but a case of someone who was controlling. And in the process of controlling, he drew to him those similar forces. So he was being possessed from the outside by a group, if you will, versus an individual. And the way you can tell is if you see them in trials, if you ever watch a trial, and you see people with no remorse, it means that possession is still working with them.
Oh, I've seen many of those with no remorse whatsoever. In fact, a lot of headlines about no remorse. You know, he sat there stoically, even when the verdict was read, with absolutely no reaction on his face whatsoever. That kind of headline.
Yeah, it's that the darkness is so dark that they just can't see the light.
All right.
It's always present and available.
This war that we're about to engage in, that seems almost inevitable, despite, you know, the fact that the stalling tactics are going on, as I knew they would, with Saddam saying, sure, come on in, take a look, and all the rest of it. At some point, that'll break down, and then we'll have the war. Now, if we go to war with Iraq, do you think that in the case of a war, there's possession not just on one side with the, in quotes, bad guys, But in order to have a, I mean, it usually takes two to tango, right? And so is there possession going on both sides before a war can happen?
During the Gulf War, it was the first war since my opening in 79 that I was able to actually observe. I was able to observe the troops and people that I met and military leaders who I met. And so it was a time period where there were a lot of people who were writing me, that both at all levels, we'll say, and asking for some insights. And so I can talk from that point of view versus like World War II or Korea or
okay.
Vietnam.
All right.
And what I found is that during that war, and maybe it was during all wars, I don't know, there is a tremendous outpouring of love and prayer from people, you know, at back home. So you've got these prayer groups working, you've got families praying for them. That energy is substantial, and it typically overweighs the negative responses, which is the reason why that the unjust wars usually end badly for example, during World War II. We can see what happened there. I mean, it was a classic case of mass possession, in my opinion. But there will be some negativity on from the good guys, but it's minimal in nature. Where the problems come in is when the soldiers come home. That's what I found. I found that after people came back and I would meet with them, I would find that they were changed. You
yes.
know, they were.
Oh, yes.
You know, and that was heartbreaking for me, really heartbreaking. And I would see cases where they were so distraught, so angry in many cases, too, that their personalities changed and they were being influenced from without. Many cases like that. And so those cases are relatively easy to turn around. The difficult cases are when something comes in and totally takes over the personality. That's a tough one. You know, there you're talking about exorcism or some form of metaphysical work.
Other than the brief experience you had in the house, have you ever seen a full exorcism?
I have. I've been part of one. There are several in New England several people who are. I guess their terms are Ghostbusters, but they're people who work in haunted houses and work with demonic possessions within a house. And so there were several cases that I was called in on those. And nothing like Rosemary's Baby or that kind of a situation. But one case I experienced in Connecticut where they thought it was a possession, and it was, but it was a poltergeist activity. Through a spirit that was just really confused. I mean, totally confused, didn't even know it was dead. And it was influenced through this young girl who was going through her, I think she was 13, 12 or 13. Mm-hmm. And so it was influencing her, and she in turn was moving objects and blowing light bulbs. And so I witnessed all of that and also talking in a different language. Which he had,
no knowledge
of. So I went in with a Catholic priest, and my role was just to observe. And we spent some time, and they went through it. So there's three meetings, and after the third meeting, nothing had really changed. And then they asked me for what my opinion was of it. Did they need more prayer? Did we need to consecrate? What do we have to do with it? And my suggestion did not go well. It wasn't accepted very well, which was that I think we needed to talk to the person who's influencing her.
Oh, really?
And so they said they could not be part of that, but the family said in desperation, we're going to agree to that even though the church doesn't condone it. So I went in and we had a session, and I talked, and I found out what the difficulty was of why that person was still there and why it was influencing this girl. And it was nothing that she had done directly other than the fact that she was going through a great hormonal change in her life, and reached that stage in her life where your parents don't know anything and you hate them, and you know, she was just going through a very confusing time in her life, which opened her up for this condition.
Did you know when you were speaking to this entity? Did you know as you talked to her when you made a breakthrough and you were no longer talking to her?
Yeah, she would start off by talking Polish. Person who had and I don't, and of course, speak it. So I would then say, "I'm sorry, I don't speak Polish." And then the mother would come in, and the mother did speak Polish, and she would translate it. And basically, I would give the message back to her, and then finally, I think maybe it was a 45-minute to an hour session. I came up with the suggestion of asking what did that person miss the most. Even I said, I know you don't believe you're not alive, but what do you miss the most? And then she said, I really miss my mother. And I said, what's her name? And the woman told me the name. And I said, let me see if I can have her come down to this level to be with you. And I did something. And next thing we knew, she just closed her eyes and went to sleep. And we tried to wake her. We couldn't. They were about to call the doctor. And then she sat up and she said, I'm really hungry. I remember that words. I'm really hungry, Mom. And you can just see the anger and all the resentment was just gone. And like most cases, they don't remember those states that they get into. It's like a catatonic state. They're just not aware of what happens. It's like they blink off, blink on.
Gordon, I had no idea you'd been doing this sort of thing.
I really don't do it, Art. That's the reason I've never mentioned this is because I don't do that. I did this in the early days because I was going through so many changes myself that I didn't know what to do. I mean, I was working 18 hours a day, training, meditating, praying, trying to figure out, you know, all this stuff. And so, you know, I didn't have a life at that time. I mean, I had sold all my possessions, my house, everything, just so I could have to eat.
You were looking for your path.
I think I knew what my path was, but I didn't know how it was going to manifest itself. You know, I didn't know. It's like going to a candy store almost, you know, and you don't know what you want to do first. I could do many things, but I didn't know what was going to be the best for me as well as the best for somebody else because I was having a lot of physical problems. Every time I saw a vision, I would have headaches.
You still do, don't you?
Not too much, because I don't do those deep sessions anymore.
All right. Hold on. We're at the bottom of the hour. We'll be right back from the high desert, the great American Southwest. This is Coast to Coast AM. My guest is Gordon Michael Scallion.